It's AI that sets your brain on fire. Brain AI. Fire. Brain AI.
Hello and welcome to the Firebrain AI podcast. I am Joe, aka Bunchu, alongside my amazing guest for today, the one and only Robert Scoble. Robert, thank you so much for joining me. I'm really pumped for this conversation. How are you doing this morning?
It's going great, man. You know, the world of AI just keeps rolling along.
Amen. It sure does. I mean, there's a lot going on every single day, and it feels like it's just getting faster than the day prior. So I'm really excited to get into some of this with you. I think you have one of the most unique perspectives of anybody that I've come across in my time in the space. I'm super excited to share your perspective with our audience here and talk about how you envision the world now that we are kind of here in this AI world, what it means for you to be, you reference a lot AI first, which I think is a really fascinating way to approach this kind of new world and this new era that we're in. And then we'll just talk a little bit about your perspective on things you're seeing. I always kind of reference you as somebody who's kind of already seen the future. So I think
I'm trying.
Yeah, I think it's super interesting.
I wrote 7 books that predicted decade-long trends, you know, so I'm all right at it, you know.
Exactly. So, I mean, for anybody who maybe has been living under a rock and is not familiar with your work, maybe you could just give a really brief background and then we'll get right into it.
Well, I was Apple's first child laborer back in 1978, and that led to a whole career of studying new things because I fell in love with new things by doing that. Back in the 70s to launched in my house. That led to a whole many things. Tesla, I launched many companies, Instagram, Flipboard, Cloudera, on and on. And wrote 7 books, right? So yeah, you know, it's been a crazy world.
Been around a little bit.
Yeah, well, I had a famous tech blog in Silicon Valley in 2000s, right? And I launched like TechCrunch and TechMeme and many people's companies and careers. So yeah,
it's incredible. And now you, I know you best from your incredible presence on X and Twitter, which, anybody has seen your battle station, it's quite impressive.
We'll see how long that lasts. You know? Is everybody over at Threads now, or I don't know. You know?
I don't know, man. Who knows? But I'm excited to
get a lot of my friends are over at Threads, you know, but it's not the same for talking about AI, you know?
So yeah, I feel you. I don't know if the discovery is quite the same there either. Yeah. So, and I mean, those Twitter lists that you've put together are really something special. I kind of utilize those a lot myself, and we'll link those in the show notes for anybody. But it's like, I mean, it's everything you need to know about everyone you need to know about in the world of AI. So how do you even put those together? Like, how long does that take?
Hours. I'm on X Pro. I have all these lists of people, right? I can watch and with AI all the time. We I'm seeing, are you hearing me okay? Because I'm seeing a connection.
Yeah, I think I can't tell if it's you or me. I think it might be your Wi-Fi. Mine looks pretty good. But I think these are actually, they're recording locally as well. They should be. So,
I'm going to switch to my other Wi-Fi. Hopefully that doesn't cause problems and see if that works.
Okay, cool.
Hello?
Hey, better?
Are we still here?
Yeah, I think we're better.
Okay. All right, so hopefully that works better.
No problem. That's cool. Did you finish talking about the Twitter list? Because I didn't hear you, but we could just pick up.
Yeah, I did. I've like 80 different lists, from entrepreneurs to investors to journalists to all sorts of different companies. Right, I have 5,200 AI companies on, all separated out on this. So, and that's really, even if everybody went over to Threads, and you know, the company list is insane to scroll through, because it gets your mind going. Like, oh my God, there's a lot of companies doing a lot of weird things in AI.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I mean, I think we are finding new things and weirder things every day. I guess that's a good place to start in terms of questions, because you know, we've just went through your insane background, right? You've kind of seen it all. You've predicted a lot of this. You've been at the forefront of tech for decades. How do you think AI's current trajectory compares to some of these earlier disruptive technologies that you've seen, like the internet, smartphones, things like that?
First of all, the fact that I've been able to find 5,200 AI companies is insane. Back in the early days of Silicon Valley, we didn't see anything like that quantity of companies and diversity of companies. So just start with that. It's like something is going on. The money, though, is very different than it was. I remember a company called Color back in the day got $40 million of investment without really having a product. And everybody in Silicon Valley was up in arms. It was like, that's ridiculous. How did they get so much money? Yeah, blah, blah, blah. And now you see companies getting like $700 million, you know, or $1 billion.
We just saw Grok the other day, $640 million, which is wild, right?
Right. Exactly my point. It costs so much to buy all the NVIDIA cards to build the models that, you know, that's one thing. The fact that all this money is here, I mean, I have a list of, I don't know, 1,500 VC firms, and I hear I don't even have like half of them. It's like, I don't know where they all are, but there's a lot of VC firms now. Back when I was growing up, there was only a handful. Right. And so that has provided the kind of capital that these AI companies need to build these models, which is pushing the whole world forward. Right.
Yeah. You've seen some, you know, pretty big platform shifting technologies, right? Like, internet, smartphones, things like
Web 2. I was sitting next to Tim O'Reilly when he was writing the Web 2 memo at the Google advertising conference, you know?
So how does this feel like it compares to things like that?
First of all, it's very different because it understands us, you know, at some level, and knows about us. Like I went on vacation, went to the Smithsonian Museums in Washington, D.C., and went to the far corners of the museum trying to find something that it, you know, ChatGPT wouldn't know anything about. Took a picture, sent it to ChatGPT, and it told me all about it. I'm like, wait. It knows everything? I didn't expect that, right? I expected the big sexy stuff to be known. But not every little like jet engine in the Air and Space Museum kind of, totally. You know, it's like, whoa, right? So this is a new paradigm shift that's hitting, right? And people haven't really wrapped their head around it. Most people haven't even tried using the vision features in ChatGPT yet. They haven't really wrapped their head around that It knows. Like, I took a picture of a picture at the Holocaust Museum. It knew what wall I was standing in front of. It told me about the wall, told me about the story, told me all about the museum. Right. And I'm like, holy shit. Oh, wait a second. It knows how it knows about. Oh, wait a second. It knows everything bad we've done to each other.
Totally.
Does it use that against us in a future, you know?
That's why
we're not going to help you anymore, because you humans are a little whack.
That's why I always say please and thank you to ChatGPT. You know,
it knew about all the slaves at Thomas Jefferson's house. I took a picture of a little shack out back, and this little shack at Thomas Jefferson's house, and there was a bunch of slaves living there. I'm like, whoa,
that's
wild. About all the slaves. Oh, geez, you know about the Holocaust and all about the slaves. Oh my, we're in deep doo-doo.
Yeah, I mean, it's so crazy. And I think your point of, you know, not a lot of people have even used the vision feature. And I mean, I think there's just, you know, you
and I don't have the new voice feature yet, which
me either.
I've seen it, I've used it, but it's like crazy.
That's going to be very, very interesting as well when people get their hands on that. And then you saw something like the Moshi demo, which was really real time kind of inference back and forth as well. And
there's others, right? Source.
Yeah, there's a bunch. And it's just like, that's the real mind blowing stuff to me. And just from a, just like a technological standpoint, the quickness of the inference of back and forth of, like, you're talking milliseconds, and it's got full context of everything you've seen or you've said to it. It's wild. And
my psychiatrist uses ChatGPT. She built a system with another guy to listen to her therapy sessions.
Yes. So
think about that one. Oh my God, that's a whole lot of privacy problem. But
I was on that space I was on that Twitter space where you had your therapist, I believe, on with you, or the therapist that was using it on with you. And that was just, I mean, that was one of those kind of mind boggling experiences. Just, I mean, it was like,
it takes notes on your therapy session, right? And it's great. In 30 minutes, it nailed all my mental illnesses. It's like, whoa, you know, AI is good at listening. Oh my. Yeah.
It's so wild. That was a platform. That was like a mind boggling moment for me, because I remember sitting there, it was like a 2.5 hour space. And I'm really listening to, you know, the therapist talk about how she was using it and how it's kind of really helped her, not only with, you know, the real active listening details that she may have missed, but things like that. And then, but really getting the thing that blew my mind was how you said that it was spot on. Like, everything that it said was really spot on.
Yeah.
And that was surprising to me. So, like, I mean,
if you could talk even a little bit about much more of that. When it's writing notes, when it's writing a transcript of a conversation, like, we could record this and it would build a transcript, then it would build a summary and notes. Then it would, you know, if we talked about tasks or anything like that, right, it might even add some reminders to things, right? I mean, it's what's just about to hit is a whole bunch of new consumer things, new kind of spreadsheets, new kind of digital assistants, new kinds of things, and that help us just by talking to us. And it's going to know us pretty well. You know, right now it's the memory isn't very, very well hooked up or really granular, but you can see that the more you give it about yourself, the better the answers get, right? In other words, we're going to give it a lot of data to have a, just cause, right? We're going to teach our robot how to cook grandma's recipe, right?
Totally. You know? I mean, I find myself doing it now. I messaged you the other day and I showed you kind of this thing I was doing with this podcast, and I took all old transcripts and I had Claude build me this entire 100 question persona survey about me, and like, to try to really get it to nail myself. And I thought that was a really interesting exercise. And I think that world that we're headed to is going, you're right, it's going to have context about everything that we do, everything we see, all of that. And it's really, you know, it's kind of an eye-opening experience. I'm curious, like, what do you think the most significant societal changes we're going to see because of this, right? Like, you know, you and I live it every day. We're breathing it. We're very deep into it. But I find the education gap is so huge still. Yeah. And I think people are going to be shocked really quickly about some of the societal changes. What do you think would be the biggest things that are impacted?
Well, it's normies, we call them, right? In other words, people who don't know anything about AI, you know, normal people.
Right. That's not derogatory. It's they're normal and we're not.
we're talking to machines. I mean, that's weird.
That's right.
And we're having machine drive our car, right? You know, I mean, that's weird. I went around America studying consumer behavior with autonomous cars. And we could talk a little bit about that. The next 18 months, we're seeing new kinds of AI glasses are going to get released, right? Snap just sort of leaked that they're coming out this fall. And so just in a couple months with a new pair of theirs. That will bring virtual beings that you can talk to and a holodeck that you can talk to, right? Hey, holodeck, take me to the Taj Mahal and I'll boom, it'll take you there. Right. And it's like, whoa, that's really crazy. What I'm seeing come out of the AI research labs, cause that's what I'm really following is tens of thousands of people in the AI research world. And what's coming is crazy, right? So, you know, for glasses, you know, you're going to have glasses that you can talk to, that you can talk to fast with multi-step sentences, right? Like, hey, do thing one, do thing two, do thing three, do thing four. And then by the time you get to four, it's already done number one and you're still talking, right? Mm-hmm. That's a huge shift in AI because the old Siri can't do that, right? We're getting autonomous cars in the next 18 months. We're getting humanoid robots in the next 18 months. I've been visiting humanoid robot companies, right? That's a lot of change. The glasses, though, when Apple and Meta come out with their glasses, that's when normal people, I think, are really going to understand AI. They're going to go to the Apple store and start talking to the thing, and it's going to start doing things that they just didn't expect. The glass, the AI driven new kinds of glasses coming. I've seen those at the Display Week. They're coming in the next 18 months, which brings a whole bunch of new things. We have autonomous cars coming. We have humanoid robots coming. We have a new holodeck coming because of the glasses and new kinds of virtual beings coming because of the glasses, and all the glasses are going to put it all together. Humans only understand new technology really when there's a paradigm shift, right? When they get a new thing, then all of a sudden they understand, oh, I can go to the Smithsonian and talk to it about anything in the museum, right? That's going to be mind blowing for people, wearing a pair of glasses into a museum or even out to dinner. You know, I was just in Prague and I took a picture of the logo on a menu, and I asked it, what should I eat at this restaurant? And it told me, and it matched what my friends who live in Prague. Yeah, that's actually pretty accurate. You know, they recommended something else, but they were like, that's a pretty legit, you know, menu. And it got that all off of a picture of a logo. Right. So, you know, this is a new world we're going into where you're going to have digital assistants in your glasses or, you know, maybe on a pin or hanging around your neck. But I'm not a big believer in those, even though I have a bunch. I should have brought mine out, but
I was going to say I got my Meta Ray-Bans right here as kind of first foray into it. And
those are pretty good, right? Those don't have a display, so they don't have the ability to show you anything, but talking to you is a good first step, right?
Yeah,
and
I also really love how they do the sound. Like, it's kind of ambient and not directly in your ear. I think that's going to be like the way that these things talk to you as well, which is pretty crazy. You know, I think that's actually a really good segue into my next question here, because you are not only kind of really immersed in AI, but you've done a lot in like the AR, augmented reality, XR space as well. Yeah. And like, how do you see, you've mentioned a couple times, you're just like the word holodeck, right?
Yeah.
So like, talk about how you see.
I have a list of holodeck companies. There's already like 550 holodeck companies building for creative people who will be building these digital avatars or the 3D scenes around you or whatever, you know, translating things, right? There's a whole bunch of them. It's really fascinating to look through like those companies and see what they're doing, because they're very different companies than existed 2 years ago. Right.
Yeah. And I've actually heard you paint a really interesting picture on Twitter Spaces about like what people might expect in the future when you're talking about like the future of creation and the future of like building worlds literally at an instant around you. Would you mind talking a little bit about that?
Hey, Siri, put a purple tree down here.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. Purple tree will show up, you know, or whatever.
Exactly. I mean, I've heard you describe it almost as like, you're going to put this thing on, you're going to ask it to do something, and it's just going to build like this immersive art world around you. And yeah. I think that's really fascinating.
Or recreate, let's say you take a picture of Yosemite National Park, like of Half Dome, it'll fill in the whole freaking park around you from one picture, right? Because it knows what it has everything. People forget, right? Particularly if you start thinking about Instagram, how many pictures of Yosemite National Park does Instagram have? Millions, totally. Right? And so the computer can recreate the 3D park around you from all those pictures. Just that, right? And then they also are driving cars through the park and making new, you know, and some people are carrying 360 cameras through the park. All of that matches together. So soon you're going to be able to have a new kind of camera. We're seeing new kinds of cameras being invented. It's just the normies, the everyday people haven't yet seen that change, you know, because Apple moves slow.
Yeah, right. Well, actually, I mean, what do you think, you know, you mentioned like the glasses might be the aha experience for a lot of people. How do you think that what Apple's doing with Apple Intelligence is going to change that experience for the common person, right? That'll be the first time a lot of people really get their hands on this stuff. How do you think that's going to change people's perspective?
So if I ask, hey, Siri, how much is 10 of these on Amazon, right? This is a rabbit AI little computer.
Does it work?
No, because it doesn't know what you're looking at. It doesn't know what you're talking about. Doesn't know, you know. But if you had a pair of glasses that has eye sensors, like this Vision Pro, right? The Vision Pro has eye sensors, so it knows where you're looking, right? So it knows you're looking at that. And then it has cameras that can take a picture of that. And it can do that kind of lookup. You could take a picture of that rabbit and ask ChatGPT, what is this? And tell me about it. And it knows. It can tell you, right? It's crazy. It's like, whoa, right? This is what, and it's the speed up of all this stuff going on behind the scenes that is leading us to the humanoid robots, right? Because a robot is going to have a camera in its eyes, and it's going to, you know, be able to know everything around you, right? Like where did you leave your ketchup? Where did you leave your keys? How much ketchup is left in the bottle, right? You know, really? Automatic shopping is coming too because of this, right? And it's building on top of each other, right? It's the model develop. That's why I'm paying so much attention to all these companies like Mistral and Meta building the Llama models and Quen. I mean, there's over on Hugging Face, there's dozens of different models of different kinds, right? Why is that all important? Not for the normal person, because normies ain't going to download very many models. But when they get the glasses, the glass, like your Meta glasses, has a Meta model running on the glasses that you can talk to, right? And learn stuff. And it can see already. And it sort of can tell what you're looking at, the Meta glasses that you have. But the ones coming in 18 months are going to have an eye sensor and really know what you're looking at and know what you're holding or what you're gesturing towards or what you're moving towards, or, right? And so now it can answer questions that if you don't have a pair of glasses on, it can't answer those, right? Because my phone right now doesn't know what I'm gesturing at. If I, my glasses would, if I had a camera on my glasses, right?
Yeah, you know, this makes me think of just like how fast all of this is happening and the gap between what a normal person experiences today with their technology versus kind of what's coming. What do you think do you think this is moving too fast for society at all in the current state? Like it feels like it's just going to be, we're in the future immediately.
It's yes. Humans don't change that fast, right?
Right.
Remember when Mark Zuckerberg turned on the news feed back like 10 years ago or whatever?
I hated it.
a million people protested it, right? Because it was too much change. It was like, I don't like this. I like the way it was. I was comfortable. I have to learn something new. I have to get used to a new thing. And most people are like that. They don't like change. That's why I built the lists over on X of all these companies so that I could start seeing the change and start understanding it myself, you know? Yeah. And most people haven't really gone through any lists of company, you know, I mean, there's plenty of web companies where you can see AI tools and go through them and start thinking about them. Most people haven't done that. So yeah, the change is too fast and hasn't been bundled up in a way that most people really understand or get. And then maybe they tried it a year ago and it hallucinated on them and gave them a wrong answer. And so they wrote it off. Well, that was a mistake because the hallucinations are just going away right now. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, yeah, the world has changed. People will catch up. Everybody likes bitching and moaning about change, and you know they try to ignore it for a bit, but they're all going to have to get into it because it's just going to be how things are done, right? Mm-hmm. You want to go to the Smithsonian? It's far superior to be talking to an AI about the museum than to try to get their audio tour or get a map.
I was just going to say, it's not even that different, right? It's like you go to a museum, you put the headphones on, you do an audio tour, and that's like the way you do it now. And this is just, you know, that on.
Yeah. But now you can talk to your personal assistant. Hey, can you tell me about this steam engine I'm standing in front of? Oh, sure. No problem. This was built in 1869. It was far, right? You know, whatever. It's going to tell you. And
what do you think that's going to be for the normal person? Is it going to be something like that, or is it going to be the iPhone? Is it going to be, you know, the glasses? I feel like is even one step of like you have to be interested in the change to buy a glasses like that or whatever. I feel like the iPhone,
you're gonna get sold the glasses because the screen in the glasses is way fucking better than this screen. You know, I mean, you start talking about a 2D screen, you know, even an iMac is, you know, this big, right? You know, and the screens in my Vision Pro are bigger than my walls, right?
Yeah. So, how's your experience been with 3D, the Pro, with the Vision Pro?
It's like the first Macintosh. It's underpowered. It's slow. It's heavy. You know, it's expensive. It doesn't do much, right? Every day, every week, something new comes out, but it's been a bit. It's a first product. It has a lot of early adopter pain. It's way too heavy. And I know lighter devices are coming. Actually, the market's going to split into two different genres. There's, because I was just at Display Week and saw the chips and saw the displays. There's a lightweight pair of glasses coming with a little projector that's about a quarter the size of a sugar cube that's right on the edge of your glasses that shoves light into a new kind of waveguide in front of you, which has billions of little tiny mirrors etched into it that make an image in front of you. It's a 720p screen in the glasses. It's also the glasses can only do something like a 70 degree field of view, which
is sort of like that, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to move around your viewport to see anything virtual. In my HoloLens, there's a game where aliens blow holes in the real walls and then start crawling through the holes and start coming at you in 3D, right? It's like, whoa. But you can only see the aliens if you're aiming the holodeck at them, right?
Right.
Now there's a heavier, something like more like the Vision Pro, where there's two 4K chips in front of you, and that you can't see through to the real world. You're seeing everything is created for you, right? It looks like the real world to you, but it's created from the cameras, and the computer is recreating a digital twin of the world around you. This is why I want everybody to go to the Apple store and get the demo, because you got to understand this world is about to go from 2D screens to 3D to holodeck to, you know, voxels, volumetric pixels all around you instead of pixels, right? Pixels are little dots. Volumetric pixels are more like cubes, right? They have multiple faces on them. And so you can break up your room into millions and millions of voxels. That's what the Apple Vision Pro does, right? If I'm looking at you in the Vision Pro, I can see you, but I'm not seeing you. First of all, I'm not seeing you at all. I'm seeing you on the computer screen, but I can see you and it looks like you, but it's computer generated. It's right?
That's so crazy.
Yeah. It's really cool. It's really cool. It is the future. It's just, it's like the Macintosh one. How many people bought the first Macintosh, or how many people bought the first iPhone? There was a few thousand people in my store waiting in line for the first one, but it didn't really start selling, mass market selling, until a couple versions later, right?
Yeah. And now now those originals are collector's items too.
it's sort of funny. No, they're not really yet. They are if you have them in the box.
Right, exactly.
If you have an unopened box, then collectors like, oh yeah, I'll take one of those. But if you have an opened one, I tried to give my, because I got the first one at Steve Jobs' store in Palo Alto, so mine actually has a little extra, right? You know, and both Apple and the Computer History Museum didn't want it, so it's not worth anything yet. Maybe
it had to be boxed. Yeah,
maybe in 20 years, you know, people will start getting, oh, what about that first iPhone? You know, but, you know.
That's awesome. I'm curious to know, you know, you obviously have incredible vision and insight into all the stuff that's going on because of these Twitter lists and because of how plugged in you are. What's an area
Microsoft flew me all over the world. So that's really, you know.
Yeah.
How many people interviewed 600 Microsoft employees, from Bill Gates to the HR person who drives you around when you're interviewing? I mean,
not too many. What's an area in this space, though, that you think maybe people aren't paying enough attention to that's going to have a huge impact? I mean, it could be anything in the AI, AR space that you think is kind of under the radar at the moment.
We already talked about it. The models are really what's going to have the impact. And they're getting better at a constant rate. You know, is it getting better fast enough? Oh, geez. You know, we had a huge change with ChatGPT, and it's still getting better. But, you know, we'll see where we are in 18 months. I'm expecting some major things to drop in the next 18 months. The models are just starting to turn on multimodality, right? I.e. it can look at the camera. It can listen to the microphone. Right. It can look at your eye sensor soon, right, to know where you're looking. That's why that innovation, the AI researchers are doing, will show up in products over the next few years. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 5 years from now, we're all going to be in a different world. We're all going to be wearing some sort of glasses or some sort of device on us to talk to us, good to help us out, because it's going to be a major, I mean, if you go to a business meeting and you don't have glasses like this, you're at a major disadvantage to somebody who does. I have many, many examples of that, right? Yeah. I mean, at some point, if you're a surgeon, you're going to be forced to use the glasses because that's how you do surgery now, right? They're using a HoloLens during surgery now. I work for a company called MetaView that does this, right? And so Yeah, we're going to be in a new world. But the things to watch are the developments of glasses, of models. NVIDIA Omniverse is a good example of this. Omniverse is a digital twin that underneath serves autonomous cars, robots, humanoid or any kind of robot, really. There's a whole bunch of different kinds of robots. Virtual beings, something that talks to you, right? That does something for you, like an assistant or a co-pilot, and a few other things, right? It's all going to run from one digital twin. And that's NVIDIA's corporate strategy going forward, right? That's their future, is Omniverse. So if you don't understand NVIDIA, you don't understand Omniverse, well, you're probably not going to understand where products are about to go, right? Because if you're watching Omniverse real closely, you can see all these trends coming, right? And start building, right, before then. So the early people are already building. The normal people who aren't in the tech world or AI world, they should be looking at the models and going, oh, how would I use this in my business, right?
Yes.
You know, how could I use this to improve my factory floor or my retail store or customer marketing, whatever you're going to do? You know, and there are places you can start doing that today. Many business people are using all sorts of stuff. I mean, I have a list of companies that are just for enterprise and working, right? And you know, you're seeing a whole lot of work being done there, because the business people are understanding, oh, this is a really major new tool to help their employees out, help their customers out, make their business more effective. You know.
Yeah, that's a great segue into kind of this, into this concept of, you know, AI first, because I think, you know, we've talked already about all these really big ideas and massive changes that are coming that are totally paradigm shifting, platform shifting, and really going to potentially scare people at how fast they're coming, right? And so how do you, you know, how do you start talking to somebody that is maybe just starting to use ChatGPT for the first time, or just starting
force to really yourself understand? The AI first thing is force yourself to use it for everything, right? Because you'll figure out what it doesn't work for, and it doesn't work for everything, but you'll figure out what it does work for. And even if you ignore, like I asked it what I should eat at this restaurant in Prague, right? I didn't listen to it. I used it to understand what was there. And I had locals I was eating with. So, they suggested something better, right? That was more specific to that restaurant that they thought was better. So it's not that you are going to always use what it tells you. You got to engage your brain on it, but it will cause you to think different, and it will educate you about the choices, and it, right, and it does know a lot of things. I used it to buy tires. I used it to buy a Philly cheesesteak sandwich in Philadelphia. If you ask it the right way, hey, I'm in Philadelphia. I'm looking for a Philly cheesesteak sandwich. Did it tell you
Pat's or Gino's? Like, which one did it tell you?
Oh, it told you all the touristy places, and then I told you this weird one that was a little bit further out of the downtown that was amazing, right? And the locals there were like, this is the best place, and I've been to all of them, and this is the best place, right? So and then you take a picture of the Philly cheesesteak sandwich and it goes, oh, you're eating a great Philly cheesesteak sandwich, Philly cheesesteak sandwich isn't a good example. I took a picture of my my wife's Iranian soup. She makes Osh soup. It told me the name of the soup in Persian, right? Because it was Persian soup. It knew that. It's like, what? How did you figure that shit out just from a picture? You know? What? And then it told you all sorts of stuff about the soup. It told you what's in the soup, and it told you how to make the soup, right? And it's like, what? Right? You know, and anyway, so yeah, it told it, from a single picture, it told me about this Iranian soup. It told me the name. It told me how to say the name in Persian. It's great at translating, right? So if you need to translate a sign or a menu from Spanish to English or something like that, because you're traveling, it's a great travel tool. And so, yeah, you live AI first and you force yourself anytime you have an instinct, try to do it with AI, you know? And right now there's a lot of things you have an instinct on that might be difficult to do with AI, but they're starting to show up. Like just this week, I got a little app that lets me talk to it and do all sorts of things on my iPhone. Like, can you send a message to Joe? Can you put Joe on the calendar?
That Hero app?
Yeah.
I downloaded it myself too. It's actually really nice for my wife and I, because that's one of the things we kind of struggle with, is her having to send me reminders of stuff. And now all of our calendars and contacts are synced, and she sent me a reminder for 2:30 and I got to do something. And so totally, I think that's really interesting. What are the main ways you use it in your daily life that you would recommend for somebody who's kind of just getting started with this experimentation?
It's really good at listening, right? So I use Limitless to record like a call like this, and it makes notes. It makes a transcript, right? It makes notes from the transcript, and then it'll even give you like tasks, right? Oh, Joe and you talked about, you know, doing a project together. Here's a task, right? You know? Right? It's like, whoa. So there's all that. You know, just understanding how good it is compared to like old Siri was really interesting. For instance, Siri is funny. Siri is, I call it AI 1.0. It's old AI now. Right. Sure. This new stuff is like AI 3.0 or 4.0, right? It's like a new system. Old Siri, if you ask it, please take me back to my car, it doesn't. It fails. It doesn't know what, it's stupid, right? If you ask it, please take me back to my parked car, it knows where your car is, and it fires up Apple Maps and puts a blue line that back to your car, right? If you take your car somewhere and you forget where you parked or something like that. The fact that it didn't understand car the same way as it understands parked car. I mean, me and you understand that real fast. The computer, the AI really struggled with that for a long time until ChatGPT came along with a large language model. So underneath ChatGPT or Anthropic Claude or Google Gemini is a large language model. That's what's running the thing. That's like the engine of the car. And this is a complex engine. It's a lot of fun to play with. And
we don't even really know how they all work yet.
Oh, well, there's people who do know how they work pretty well at this point. You know, I mean, tomorrow I'm putting up a video with a guy who's doing a new kind of compression technology where he converts your human language into language that the LLM understands and compresses it. It's like a new compression technology. But this language going back and forth between LLMs, all of a sudden you can't understand it as a human. So the people who are building this understand this machine pretty well at this point and what it does. Right. Yeah. And they have evaluation tools now they didn't have 18 months ago. So the AI engineering field that's building these new things is really starting to come along and starting to remove hallucinations, which are the mistakes that AI makes. Right. Mistakes is sort of funny because the whole thing is a hallucination. It's just,
totally.
it didn't know, it'd give you some bullshit, right? It's sort of like a human being, right? If a human being doesn't know, they'll make up some bullshit for you.
Exactly. Yeah, that's really funny. I mean, that's the LLM conversation is really interesting. And you mentioned earlier that, you know, they're all kind of going natively multimodal from the ground up.
Here's some examples, because you asked me, what do I use it for? Everything. You get a legal doc, send it to the ChatGPT and see what it does, right? And if that doesn't work, send it to Anthropic and send it to Gemini and send it to Poe and send it to Llama and see how they all work, because they all work differently. They all give you a little different user interface. They all give you a little different answer, right? And soon you're going to have an AI that can talk to all of those other AIs and get 7 answers back and then go through all the answers and compare them for you. Oh, here, ChatGPT gave you a better answer because it had more detail on this or whatever, right? You know,
totally. So, yeah.
But legal docs, here's one. Crisis. Humans suck at crisis, right? Mm. My first story at when I was a student at San Jose State was to interview the fire chief because 4 kids got hurt in a fire. And he said, oh, you know, sometimes in crisis, the right thing is to do is absolutely nothing. Because two of the kids jumped out their window, broke their back, and are paralyzed.
Oh, right? My goodness. Horrible. Yeah.
And 2 of the kids ran out into the fire standing up. Don't run into fire, people. What's the first rule of fire? Crawl, right?
Yeah, you know? Right.
But, he said in all 4 cases of these kids getting really hurt, they had a 4-hour fire door between them and the fire. And he said, if they had done nothing, they would all have been here today and not have had a problem. I would have, you know, we would have gotten there in 15 minutes and saved their ass and not a problem. But they jumped out of their, you know, so people do the wrong thing in crisis. So I've been asking a lot of questions about crisis. Like, oh, my wife is lying on the floor, not breathing. What should I do? And it tells you step by step what to do, how to save her life, you know, including calling 911.
Wait till it can like talk you through that, right? With
the and show you
UCOM, right?
And exactly. Show you. This is why the glasses are so important, because a company in Germany called Reflect, which now got bought by PTC and is in the bit, is in their thing. But they showed me how you could teach a human how to take apart a oil pump or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. Step by step, it shows you take those 3 screws out first, right? Then take the top, and it shows you how to do it, like in front of you, on top of the machine that you're trying to. In other words, you don't need to learn in a classroom anymore. You don't need to learn by reading a book. You don't even need to learn by watching a YouTube video. You put on these glasses, and it tells you how to fix it, right?
Yeah.
And that's coming for everything. But right now it has to talk to you with text or with a voice, and it does. It you take it through crisis, like, my house is on fire, what should I do? It takes you step by step by step. I'm like, oh, this is really cool, right? It's gonna save a lot of lives.
Yeah,
that's why I'm so, you know, pro AI, because where everybody else is like, oh, AI is going to kill us all or whatever, you know, or take away my jobs. Yeah, it might help you save your wife's life too. And that'll be a good outcome for you. Right. Mm-hmm. And do you think of going to Google? It's hard to find all that information on Google.
Totally.
ChatGPT just puts it all in step by step by step by step, right?
Yeah. I often think, I mean, I have 2 small kids. They're 3.5 and 1.5. And I'm like, man, how are their lives going to be just so completely different than mine, right? Like, just from education to what jobs are going to look like in that, you know, in 15 years. And so what's your thought on, like, you know, extrapolate this 15 years out into the future?
Then we get into the Neuralink area. I think most people are going to get glasses before they get Neuralink, right? Something on your brain or something on your head. Actually, hold on a second. Yeah, I have a few devices here that do brain computer interfaces, right? This company's NextMind and got bought by Snapchat. But it put, 9 sensors on the back of your head. And there's an AI computer in here that listens to the electrical signals coming off of your brain. All your visual processing is done in the back of your head. So what you're seeing is being processed by your brain in the back of your head. And so this device could sort of tell what you're looking at or what you're trying to do visually.
Wow.
And this is a very early brain computer interface, but you could think of something like this that's much nicer, you know, in 15 years, that you wear a hat or something like that. And all of a sudden you're just thinking things and things are happening in the computing or even in the glasses in the future. So yeah, if they have the full Monty of wires on their brain, mm-hmm. then you're seeing what's possible. This guy is just thinking of moving his cursor across the screen and it moves, right? It's like, whoa. that's crazy shit.
Insane. That stuff blows my mind. I'm like, yeah. I don't even know. I can't even. I mean, my wife was blown away just by doing my 11 Labs voice clone. I can't even imagine what it's going to be like when you do have something, you know, understanding in real time what you're thinking and almost taking action before you can actually even physically do it, which is wild. It's
you're right, but Brian Rommel talks about the human operating system, because we're a machine. People don't like to think about that, but your brain is a neural network. It's a computer. It's just a very different kind of computer than digital computers, right? SAN-based computers, silicon-based computers, right? That are really little light switches at the bottom. It's very different kind of computer, but you're still a computer. And if you hook a wire up to your computer and it can talk, it's like a lot of new things are possible all of a sudden. And so 15 years from now, that whole field is going to be ripping and roaring. And so my kid's 14 right now. So, and by the time he's 30, oh man, it's a very different world than we're living.
What do jobs look like in your opinion in that world?
You want to buy some clothing on my metaverse little shack? I don't know. You know, I mean, there's going to be a lot of new jobs. I mean, there's a lot of new jobs in this world. The problem is they're very highly technical. You got to go to, you know, college for 6 years to get some of them, right? They're hard to get a truck driver. Oh, right. If a truck driver gets laid off, that truck driver doesn't have the skills to get these new jobs to work in the AI field. It's a real problem because, let's start with truck drivers. 1.3 million people drive trucks, right? That's the number one job in America. And we can see in 15 years, those jobs are a lot gone, right? You're seeing autonomous vehicles in San Francisco everywhere now, right? It might not be in normal everyday Kansas, but it's coming, and it's getting really, really good. And in 10 years, it's going to be freaking way better than any human at driving. So do we need drivers in 10 years? No.
Your car's going to be its own Uber, right? It's going to leave your driveway and go earn you some money picking up somebody from the airport, right?
Right. And so now what do we do for these people? Do we do a guaranteed minimum income? That's one of the proposals, like, we just need to pay people. That doesn't work because humans aren't happy if they just sit at home getting a paycheck. And first of all, the government's never going to give you enough to really live properly, right? And so you're gonna, even if you got a UBI check, you would still have a job trying to earn some extra money to pay,
totally,
buy new cool shit, right? Instead of just paying for food. So we need a new policy. We need another way to go at it instead of UBI, which my dad helped our family escape poverty by getting a PhD, right? That requires you to have a lot of wealth to take 5-6 years off and go to school. Because if you're trying to work a job and do that, then you're not learning properly. You're not sleeping, you're not studying, you're not hanging out with other kids, learning chemical equations or something like that, right? You're not really doing what you need to do, which is learn something new. So we need a policy like my dad got the GI Bill, right? He went to the military for a few years, and then they gave him enough wealth to go to Rutgers University and get his PhD with the GI Bill. They paid for schooling, right? We need something like that for these truck drivers. So these truck drivers can go to school for 4 years or something like that and learn something new. Even, you know, I'm not talking about making him a computer scientist or anything like that. Even if you want to just put do some like my next door neighbor does concrete, and other people, my brother-in-law does glass, right? He runs a glass business. It took him 4 years to go from a tech executive to being approved and licensed to put glass into people's homes. He had to go and be an apprentice for a while, right? And learn the skills and learn how to do all the different kinds of glass and all the different kinds of problems you're going to see, right? That people are going to, you know, want new windows or new building needs new windows or something like that, or new shower doors or whatever. It takes 4 years. And that was for a smart person who had a tech executive job, right? You know, to relearn. So we need something like that. The problem is in America, our politics we're very divided. You can see that, right? And we just aren't getting together and going, hey, we need a new policy. This is coming at us, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody's talking like that. And we need to start thinking about that as a people. What are we really going to do if jobs get plowed over under, like old jobs, right?
Yeah.
There's always plenty of new jobs. I guarantee you there'll be new jobs decades from now that, you know, people will need done. But going from the old job of working at McDonald's to this new job of being highly technical, oh, that's a lot of work for a human.
Yeah. Also, I mean, just the speed at which one happens versus the other, right? Like if, you know, GPT-5 drops tomorrow and there's agents that can do, you know, all of these lower level knowledge work jobs and things like that, or
for a humanoid robot, right?
Correct. Yeah. And then you've got this insane speed at which jobs are potentially lost versus this slower trajectory of new jobs being created, which I think is what potentially causes an issue in, you know, not the not so distant future. So it'll be really interesting. I think, like, you know, our whole educational system's going to have to adopt new things and pretty quickly.
Yeah, you see the division there too, right? Some schools have completely banned AI. Mm-hmm. My son's school is one of them. It's here in Silicon Valley. So I know a lot of schools are banning it. Other schools are like, let's go, you know, use this to help kids learn. AI can be used to cheat, right? Just write my paper for me, or it can be used to learn. Please show me all points of view on X topic, right? All of a sudden you're learning a lot from it. We have to school teachers and the administration has to understand how to encourage kids to learn with this tool rather than just use it to get a, you know, passing grade on a essay or something like that, which, you know, that'll get you caught anyways, because they still hallucinate. And they also, the AIs have a certain writing pattern, and if I call you on it, you won't have the same pattern, right?
Totally.
And
so, yes.
And so you got to, if you really want to cheat on using an AI for a college or whatever, you have to remove all the mistakes, which means you have to learn, right?
Yeah.
Because you have to go through each fact or each thing and make sure that that's accurate, which means you have to do the research to make sure it's accurate, right? And it didn't bullshit. And two, you have to add your own point of view into it, your own human sauce, right?
Yeah,
we're weird and different, and we have stories, and right, and you got to put that shit in there, right?
I realized this with my own thing that I'm doing here. So I tried to do this thing where I cloned my voice. I created a bunch of workflows to write a daily podcast script, do work research for me, et cetera, et cetera. It then automatically records the whole script and puts it out as a daily 10-minute podcast. Yeah. And the first couple episodes, I've put out like 20 now. And the first couple episodes, it was very much just like, it did a great job. The content was good, but it was very much just my voice reading the news, right? That's what it felt like. And I was like, well, you know, what really makes content good is the point of view and the real opinion of it, and teaching somebody why this news is important and how they might think of it from your perspective. Yeah. And so what I changed up was not too much, but I added one more workflow step where the AI then takes the original script, writes a set of questions and sends it for me to answer. And then I answer them all and I inject it back into the final script. And the content is so different, right? But it makes your point, it proves your point perfectly, where like the difference between what it spit out without, you know, my opinion or point of view and after are very different. And what did I have to do in the meantime? I had to understand the context of all of those things and actually be able to provide an educated opinion on it. Right. Yeah. So it's a perfect example of what you just talked about. And I think it's fascinating. Right. But I mean, it's wild that anything like that can even be done, but it's just going to be more and more prevalent. And
here's one, right? We've been talking for an hour. You can take this whole video, put it into an AI, right? You can Google how do you have your AI listen to a YouTube video or something like that. And there's tools to do it, right?
I just
had a bunch on X.com. And so you start thinking different, right? And this is why I would say AI first. Don't watch a video, right? Mm-hmm. You're watching the show. Did you have your AI watch it first? To tell you if it is what's in the video is this important for you, or give you a synopsis, or take you right to the important part, right?
100%. I have a prompt actually that does something very much like that, where it literally will watch the video or you know, transcribe it, and then it actually grades it on like, hey, do you even need to care about this? Like, is this content anything that you should be watching? And it's really fascinating, right? Because it's like, sometimes it's like, this is S tier content, definitely watch it. Sometimes it's like, no, skip this. And sometimes it's in the middle and you're like, okay, well, maybe I'll watch it, maybe I won't. But it's fascinating.
Just read the transcript, right? Or just read the summarization that it did. You know, here's the five key things that Scoble and Joe talked about.
You had a tweet that was perfectly about this the other day about the Lex Friedman Elon Neuralink.
That was 8 hours long. Fucking way anybody's gonna listen to that, right? I mean, there are people who like listening along. I mean, that's actually a pretty good one for an 8 hour thing, but give it to your AI and tell them what they talked about. And then, are you interested in any of that? Oh, you're interested in the fourth thing? Go to that, right? And watch that.
Totally. You know? Yeah, it's really...
That's only 15 minutes, you know? Yeah. It's a lot easier to watch a piece of it than watch the whole thing, you know?
Absolutely. It's just fascinating where we're headed. So as we kind of wrap up here, what are some, I guess, one recommendations that you would have for people to learn about this stuff where maybe they're just getting into it for the first time?
I built the list for you. Go to x.com, go to my profile, go view lists. I built lists of more than 20,000 people, more than 5,000 companies, and they're all segmented into separate lists, right? So if you're interested in education, I separated those out from the main list, right? And so you can watch all of them or just a part of them. That alone will start you understanding, this is how the world is changing, because this list is pretty up to date right now, right?
Yeah.
I just added 3 companies to it this morning, right? So I mean, it's crazy, right? And you start following that, you start following some of the people, you know, whether they're on Threads or LinkedIn or X.com, you're going to start learning just by that. Then, you know, do you have a business problem that you think you might, you know, be using that for? And then you have to start doing some research, like, okay, how do I split this? How do I get AI to help me with, you know, this marketing task or this factory task or whatever? And it might not do it today, but that research is going to pay dividends on you, because you'll be trying, like, what are AI agents? How do you build them? What tools are out there, right? What are they good for? How do they work, right? Here's an example. If you ask AI to write you a book, it'll try, but it won't be very satisfying. It won't be very good. If you tell it, write me a table of contents, much better, smaller task, right? And then, can you write chapter 1? Much better.
Write me the outline and then expand on the outline, right? Well,
it does well with smaller tasks than bigger tasks, right? So you have to take your bigger task and split it up into pieces, right? That's agentic thinking. That's like, oh, how do I think about it? And it'll help. It can help you, you know, talk to it. I have a process here. I'm trying to make more automatic, you know, how do I do this? And it'll give you some ideas. And if it doesn't give you ideas today, a year from now, I guarantee you it'll be a different story. World is moving so fast.
How close are we?
Soon you won't need to go through the 5,000 companies. Your main AI, your personal assistant. Hey, assistant, can you build me a website for a car wash or something like that? Right?
Go find me my next month's worth of podcast
guests. It'll go through all that list of people, right? Because that's what it does. What AI does real fast, it can go through 5,000 things like boom, 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 find you the three that build websites and then sign up for them and have it build you a sample website. And then it'll bring three websites back to you and go, hey, our agent team has three websites to show you. Which one do you want to use, right?
Yeah, it's crazy where we're going. It's amazing.
Of course, that assumes we need websites in the future.
Yeah, well,
I assume we're going to need websites in the future. They're going to be very different, though.
They might be like ephemeral and on demand, right?
Well, it might have like your business's hours and your location and your customer service contact, you know.
Just something for your agent to read, right? Like,
for other, it's sort of like this video. I don't care that people even watch my videos anymore. They're going to stick it in YouTube and then the YouTube will, or the AI will tell them whether it's important to watch or not and what we talked about. Well, same thing with your business. You split it up into smaller chunks, you know, and along the way, you're going to learn how to prompt, because prompting, you know, most normal people prompt like they're talking to Google,
right?
just put in a few words. Talk to it. Right. That's not even the pros give it like prompts this long, like
with 20 restart examples. The
engine. Well, not only that, restart the engine, right? Clear out your memory, start afresh, right? That's one of the prompts I see a lot of AI pros using, because that cleans out the memory. And then start giving it context, like you're a professor, right? In fact, go on, right? And then tell it the problem. And then, oh, here's other ways it's been solved, right? And there's people who do really complex prompts with a lot of data about them. And then the engine gives it back a really great answer, right? Because you understand how to talk to it and push it around and how to give it enough so it doesn't feel like it needs to hallucinate, you know, make totally shit up for you.
Yeah. I mean, I liken it to literally having a conversation with another human being, right? Whether it's whether it's me
with a little weird, I don't talk to you about, hey, restart yourself.
Right.
Take a breath.
Right.
But if I was trying to take a breath, what? It's a computer. But doing that, you get a better answer. Right.
Yes. I've even seen things like, you know, study this for 324 hours. And it's just like gets it to, you know, really consider what it's thinking. But the point is, like, if I'm talking to you and I say something that doesn't have enough context to you, well, maybe you will know what I'm talking about, but likely not. Right. And you're going to give me a poor response. But if I was asking you to do a task and I gave you enough detail, you would probably understand what I'm talking about, be able to present something back to me that is that works, right? Or at least it has the context of what I was trying to tell you. So it's really, I mean, that's how I have been thinking about this is garbage in, garbage out, but also in the same way I would talk to another human being, because it's really conversational and you have to provide it with enough context. It's like if you had an employee and you're like, I want a PowerPoint. Well, that doesn't do anything, but I need a PowerPoint on the top restaurants in San Francisco, and it needs to have menus and pricing, and it needs to be returned and it needs to be read. Well, now you're going to give me something back that is what I'm looking for, rather than I need a PowerPoint, right?
Yeah. You know? So the more you can give it, generally the better, but anyways, if you're really starting to get in AI, you're going to pick up a lot of these tricks just by being on the right Discord server, right X.com list or whatever. That's how I'm learning. I'm following all these brilliant people, and once in a while, some of them share prompt tricks. You know, oh, I just found a new prompt trick. You know, and that's totally how I found this guy I'm putting up this weekend who's doing this new compression technology. He's like, oh, you don't even need to use English with these things. I'm like, what?
Wow.
You know, yeah. We can talk. These are very complex engines, machines that you can talk to in their code, and they understand. They understand all 120 languages that humans do, but they also understand their own language, right? So then all of a sudden you start learning stuff like that. Then you start learning advanced prompting techniques, which doesn't take that long. My psychiatrist hooked up with an entrepreneur, an AI entrepreneur who really understood the prompting well, and he taught her in a couple of hours how to write prompts that would get very useful things out of them. And she talks to it like she's talking to a PhD student, right?
Yeah.
You're a PhD student at Stanford University. You're doing analysis of psychological detail, right? Her prompts are like this long that she wrote. She has seven different prompts because it listens to one speech or one conversation and then writes seven different kinds of notes. Highly detailed, highly scientific notes that are approved for insurance company and government regulation, right? Stuff like that. Well, she had to write the prompts of how to talk to this PhD student to do the notes for her, right? The PhD student's the AI, right?
Right. Yeah. It's crazy. It can even help you. It can even help you write the prompt for it, right? So I do this thing where I give it the prompt, and I even say, like, here's my output I'm looking for, and then I'll give it the output it gives me, and I say, grade this on a scale of 1 to 10, and then I'll just iterate with that until it gives me something that is very close to the or exactly the output I'm looking for.
Bingo. And we didn't talk about the holodeck very well. You know, I went to Antietam National Park, which is where the biggest Civil War battle was, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a very sacred place, very big place, very beautiful place, actually. I resisted going there for a long time, and I'm like, oh, Civil War battlefield, why do I want to do that, you know? But on there they had cannons out on the field in the right place to recreate, you know, a certain thing, and they had a church there that was there in the Civil War, which was a key part of the whole battle. And you take a picture of the church and it tells you all about it. You take a picture of the cannons, it tells you all about those. And then you start going, but could you simulate a battle here? Mm. And it does. It sends you a picture back of the battle on the field at the place you just took a picture of, right? And it's like, and it's pretty accurate because it's based on all the historical photos that they, you know, that they ingested, because they ingested everything they could get their hands on to make these models, right? Mm-hmm. And so it does pretty good. Well, in the holodeck, I'm expecting a full-on, like, I've been to a Civil War recreation with real human beings shooting cannons and shooting muskets at each other, right? And, you know, and drumming and having noise and yelling. That's what I want. Next time I go, wearing a pair of glasses, hey, can you recreate a battle here? You know, and make it realistic and make it, you know, I want to hear the cannons.
someone will be standing next to you without them, and you'll be looking like you're in the Matrix dodging cannon fodder.
Yeah. You know, it's really gonna be weird. That's why I say the future is weird, you know, and you got to get over the fact that it's gonna be weird, but it already does a simulation, right, with a single picture. Wait until it sends a video back to you, to your glasses, and your glasses turn that into a 3D scene around you. Yeah. And we're not far from that. We're getting the video tools like Kling out of China or Sora from OpenAI. You talk to it and it creates a video and it recreates historical scenes pretty good. Right. So you can see this kind of use case coming along and people will enjoy doing that. Right.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Do you think, I just popped in my
head. It'll help you learn more about the Civil War and how the battle went. Here's one, right? At one of the battlefields we visit, they had a display with lights on it that showed all the troop movements as they battled, right?
Cool.
So some historian built, you know, did the work, found all the data, found all the documents, all the notes, talked to people, and built this whole display, right? And yeah, AI can do it better. I can see it coming, you know, it can recreate the whole freaking thing, like recreate the soldiers marching across a bridge and then blowing it up, you know. I mean,
crazy. It's wild. Do you think this made me think of like just all the impacts it could have in all these areas of life, but like the holodeck is something that's interesting. Do you think this technology eventually, when, you know, if AGI is achieved, et cetera, like, do you think we'll be in a live forever state at some point as a human in some way, shape or form?
Your biological body is still going to die someday. Mm-hmm. At least in today's context. Now I know people who are working on longevity and solving aging and making life longer and stuff like that. And that's sort of interesting, but you know, is that here yet? No. And I have problems with that whole feel. Cause to me, I don't want to live 300 years. That's sort of weird. first of all, it's weird. And second of all, you know, the real driver for me, one of them is I spent a lot of time in old folks homes because my mother-in-law had a brain tumor and she was stuck in these old folks homes for years. And so I got to see, you know, people at the end of their lives, you know, and how dismal it is. Give me a freaking pair of glasses and let me watch, you know, my kids grow up or something like that. Right. Totally. Have a video conference with them or give me a holodeck. And, you know, while I'm sitting in the wheelchair with you next to you in the old folks home, they're like, hey, holiday, I want to see a concert today. Or, you know, I want to play blackjack with my friends, you know,
yeah, absolutely. Totally.
You know, make my life more enjoyable until the end of it. Right. Don't be trying to extend that shit for 300 years.
Sure.
You know, that's, well, do that too, but you know, they go hand in hand. Because if you're not able to learn and keep your brain fresh, why are you staying alive longer? You know?
Yeah, absolutely. The elderly point is really interesting. I was just talking about this yesterday in the context of the friend device, right? The necklace, and I think that's an incredible use case for something like that, right? Because I used to work in the medical field that myself, I was actually a post-acute care person. So I spent a lot of time in, you know, nursing homes, home health, hospice myself. And it's one of those things that, you don't realize it until you're in those places a lot. And something like this technology, even as it is now, is helpful in that same context, right? It's just, absolutely. It's pretty interesting. So.
And when we get displays, it really, I mean, the reason those places are so dismal, first of all, you're in a you're in a room with two people. So another patient is over there. There's a lot of beeping, a lot of intrusion, nurses coming in to check on you every once in a while, right? Turn you over, make sure you don't get bed sores or something like that. The TV in the room is a little tiny TV without Dolby Atmos, a shitty sound, shitty TV, no choice. Right. And that's why people put on political talk show. Right. And that's dismal. Right. Who wants to watch Fox News or CNN all day long? You know, that's dismal. So put me in a pair of glasses. Now I have a movie theater in my room. Right.
Totally. Yeah.
And so now I can watch movies all day long. At least I'm having a little bit more fun. Or I can watch CNN on a big fucking screen instead of that little small screen on the wall. Right. And absolutely. So, you know, it just makes your experience much more enjoyable. And you know, and then, you know, FaceTime, if you had a Vision Pro and I had a Vision Pro and everybody had a Vision Pro, we wouldn't be doing this in 2D.
Yeah, absolutely.
We would be doing this in 3D, right? And hanging out and playing some blackjack together or something, you know? Or like Nanom lets a material scientist blow up a chemical structure bigger than your house and walk around and stick your head in it, you know, and click on an oxygen molecule and go, could I change that to a carbon? What would that do? You know? And when I got a demo of it, there was three scientists walking around with me. Oh, high five, you know? Right. And they were telling me about it. Like, hey, check this out, man.
Like
this is how vaccines are going to attack this thing. We're going to make it so that this thing can't attach to the human body with these little things, right? And we're going to take away the power of this thing, right? And you all of a sudden you're learning about it in a whole new way and having fun because it's visual, it's immersive, you're hanging out with cool people and they're teaching you. Oh, school is going to change. You know, totally. I wish I had this tool. Tool in chemistry class, man, I might have actually passed.
Me too. I was a good student, but you know, it's funny. You kind of mentioned it before. I was a good student for the wrong reasons. I wanted the grade and not as much appreciative of the learning for myself. And then you know, now you're an adult and I'm like, oh shit, homework was for me, not for, you know,
like, I forgot all my calculus too. Yeah, exactly. My kid gets algebra homework. You know, I can't even do that anymore. My brain is just, so that's another thing I use AI for. Take a picture of the homework and ask it for help. Like, 100%. Hey, I'm a parent. My kid got this weird ass math homework. I have no fucking idea what to do for him. You know, can you help me out? You know, so the parents are cheating.
I will 100% be doing that. I had Claude write me a letter from Spider-Man telling my kid that he should listen and follow the rules, and I put it in the mailbox. So I'm already guilty of using AI to cheat in that way.
That's hilarious.
That's funny. But I think that's a good place. Robert, this was an incredible conversation. I really appreciate your time. I think people are going to love hearing your perspective on all this stuff. Where can people find you? Obviously in the holodeck, but where else?
X for now. If X gets closed and Threads or somewhere else, but I'm on all the places, you know, the LinkedIn and Facebook and all that. But X is where the AI industry is right now. And it's where I can study it and share it. So most of my work is done there. I'm on YouTube and all the places, but you'll find it all from X. Because anything I do, you know, I'll put on X as long as X is up and running. Radically changes and it doesn't work the way, then we'll have to figure it out again. But, you know, you'll still figure out where I am. Google.
We'll find you. Search GPT will find you. Everybody.
Here's a mind-blowing thing. The LLM read my, I had a famous blog from 2000 to 2015, right? It read all of those blogs. And so I'm part of the large language model. So you can talk to the large language model. Oh, it knows. Please show me all points of view on Robert Scoville. It'll tell you all the shit I've done in my life and all the good things I've done. It's like, what? And then you know, it's really weird talking to it about things I've done. Like, it's like, whoa, you read all my blogs, didn't you?
That's exactly right. I mean, it's gonna know that about me eventually because I've been podcasting for so long that I just have hours and hours and hours, hundreds of hours of my voice talking about God knows what.
Same thing here. I've been on Twitter space, on audio space on X, and thousands of hours, right? And it has all the transcripts.
It's crazy. I mean,
it knows a few things. Grok will tell you a few things about me.
We will really, we'll really be a step ahead in front of those digital twins that are coming, right? So ours will have very good context of us. Yeah, that's funny. But awesome, Robert.
That's going to do it for us today, Firebrains. Don't forget to join our free Firebrain AI school community to stay on top of all the latest AI trends and to learn more about how you can practically implement AI and automation into your business and personal life. You can find the community in the description below. Thanks for listening. It's AI that sets your brain on.